Kauaian Sports Talk. Today is Wednesday, May 15th. Before we get started, here are a few reminders. We would love to hear from you, and here are several ways to weigh in. Call us at 646-716-5564, or join us in the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/Tarvino, or follow us on Twitter at Weigh In Sports. Now here's your host, Brian Tarvin, and co-host Trey Patterson. Let's weigh in.
Thank you, Michelle. Welcome, everyone. Wednesday night's one of the best times of the week because we're very close to Friday, so thanks to everyone that could join us. And we are the Staff Picks Show on Blog Talk Radio starting at midnight tonight, so I just want to thank Blog Talk Radio, and hopefully we can get a lot of listeners, Trey. And we have Trey back with us tonight. He's a great co-host of mine. How's the week going, Trey?
Hey, man, going well, you know. It's kind of a slow sports time for most football fans, Tarvin, but there's always something we can talk about with football. It seems like a few football-related stories today for us to talk about, so always a good time.
Exactly, and you know, there'll probably be a lot of new listeners to our show coming this week, so I just want to let everyone know, if you want to hear about football, then this is a show on Blog Talk Radio. We have the best football, college football and NFL football out there. I promise you, you will not be disappointed. We're on every Wednesday and Sunday from 9 to 11 Eastern. Sometimes we cut it short when it's not football season. But we always try to manage to squeak some football in, Trey. And that's really what our show's about.
Yeah, absolutely. It certainly is the fundamental, focus of our show. And you know, with that, Tarvin, I wanted to ask you a question right off the bat once you get the call-in number out there to our folks.
All right, call-in number, we'd love to hear from you, 646-716-5564. And just a reminder, we will have a special guest tonight, Brian Paul with AFL Sports Recruiting. Trey, he's coming back, looking forward to that interview. So go ahead, shoot. I'm ready for your question.
So, I mean, you know, we talked about this a lot, Tarvin, about how, you know, the New York Jets, and we talked about this last year in their quarterback situation. So, you know, they went into, you know, recently, and they said all five quarterbacks on the roster are going to compete for the starting job. Well, one of them just retired, Tarvin. David Garrard had his knees swollen up real bad, couldn't play. What do you think about the quarterback situation for the New York Jets, and is this now Mark Sanchez's job to lose?
Well, honestly, I'm trying to think about Garrard. Really, is he leaving the Jets because of 100% the injury, or does he realize, Trey, it's going to be so hard to win the job in a way? I mean, they just drafted Geno Smith, which should tell Garrard something, which should also tell Sanchez something. So I'm wondering, is it worth it, Trey, to put in that extra physical therapy, the extra training to get in shape, and the practices just to ride the bench? So I think, you know, looking at it, I believe he thinks he's not going to start or probably play. I think he knows he would be number three at least. I mean, that's at the best, number three out of all of those guys. So I think he's smart to hang it up. I mean, who wants to be the quarterback for the Jets? I don't want any part of that if I was an NFL player.
Well, I mean, certainly when you could be looking at a depth chart of a third for a veteran like that, and given the fact that, I mean, he has, you know, honest to goodness knee issues and have been going on for a long time. It's why he was sort of out of football for a little bit anyway. So, you know, I believe that his knees are problematic, but I also agree with you that, you know, you may be looking at the situation as, do I want to walk into this, you know, hornet's nest that is the job of, you know, the starting quarterback for the New York Jets, or maybe even the bench warmer behind the circus that's going to happen there? And I think you're right. I mean, with the pain, is it worth the gain? I don't think it was for him.
Exactly. I mean, there's so much drama going on in New York, and I wouldn't want to be a part of it. So congratulations for Garrard. Trey, I know he says he's retired. Is he retiring or is he leaving the Jets?
I think he's retiring. I think he's outright retiring. So I think he's hanging him up.
Well, I would not be surprised if, you know, he leaves right now and all of a sudden he signs with someone else. You know, someone at least where he can be a backup to get some good reps in. So I just think maybe, you know, the Jets are always in the media and it's always for the negative, Trey. So maybe he just didn't want a part of that. want to be a part of it. I can't blame the guy. I mean, he's an average quarterback. I mean, you never know what he can do, but he's old now, Trey. The knees are bad. You're old. It's just not an old quarterback's league anymore.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Well, I mean, that was a good question to start off with. We're talking football here. And you know, what was this today that you heard about before we get into the NBA? One of Florida's assistant coaches in college football referred to Nick Saban as the devil. So this is the second or third coach, Trey, I believe, in this offseason has referred to Saban as the devil.
Yeah,
what's
I mean,
going
this
on?
Is Tim Davis, the Florida assistant coach. He called Nick Saban the devil. And then what's even more interesting is on College Football Live, which is an ESPN broadcast, Mark May basically called Tim Davis a backstabbing coward. So, you know, I don't know how an assistant like Tim Davis can stir the pot so much and get, you know, angst from even Mark May on ESPN. But, I mean, tell me, I mean, if you're Will Muschamp, are you okay with an assistant, you know, really stirring up bulletin board material for the, you know, the best team in the SEC for the last few years?
Well, I mean, you have to remember where this was said. I believe it was a booster event. You know, these guys talk severe trash, heavy trash every time they meet. So he probably did it just to fire the alumni up and, you know, the boosters, just hoping to get a laugh. But sometimes this is taken out of context. My question, Trey, is why does Mark May care and why is he commenting about this? Does he have a man crush on Nick Saban?
Well, you know, I don't know if there's a backstory with old Mark May from ESPN, but it certainly has started to draw coverage. I mean, that certainly was almost just as much of the story as Tim Davis saying, you know, that to the, you know, the speech he gave to these boosters. I mean, that became even as big a story as, you know, what Mark May was saying. So, you know, this is interesting. I think it'll make a little bit of fun for the SEC fans and for those of us who love college football in the off season when you have, you know, a new assistant coach just bulletin boarding the material like crazy already. I mean, I don't think you really want to give Alabama a whole lot of fuel just to get ready for anybody. But, you know, if they play next year, Tarim, I don't think they're on the schedule. But, you know, just for Florida, definitely interesting.
Well, you know, Muschamp and Davis both coached under Nick Saban, actually. And I think what he was meaning, really, is looking at that. Nick Saban's mean. He's not a very social person. He's not going to walk around and say, hey, how's it going? I hope your family's doing well. He could care less. Nick Saban is about winning, and that's it, preparing, you doing what he wants you to do. Where Will Muschamp is one of those, you know, just outgoing personalities, wants to please people, wants everybody to like him, wants to talk to everybody. So I think that's the difference when he says the devil. I think maybe that's what he was referring to, just the personality in general. But do you remember Vanderbilt's coach, Franklin, you know, calling him, what is he calling him? Nick Satan?
Yeah.
You know, and he came back and said he was just joking. But you have to be careful. I mean, Alabama's, you know, a dynasty, building a dynasty right now. So I would not make a mad, Trey. I'm with you.
Well, you know, you got all these teams, and I understand, you know, you have to rile up your fan base. And Alabama certainly has been dominating, you know, college football for a while. So they're the target. But at the same time, I mean, really, when a team is as good and as well coached as Alabama with so much talent, you really don't want to give them a reason to play you other than the fact that you're on the schedule.
Yeah, I wonder if someone would have said this about, say, Tommy Tuberville or Gene Chizik at Auburn or Malzahn, would ESPN come out and defend them like that? So, you know, you don't mess with ESPN's media darling. The Alabama Crimson Tide, there that could be some consequences. I wonder if Lou Holtz is going to come after him now.
Well, we know Lou Holtz. If he said something about the Irish, I think that would get Lou Holtz fired up.
Oh God, he would. He'd probably have a heart attack. We're going to get into some basketball, and like I said, at around 9:30, Brian Paul's going to come on, and after that, we're going to finish with some football, college basketball, baseball, some miscellaneous stuff. So I'm excited about this show. Let me get the call-in number one more time, 646-716-5564. Join us in the chat room. We have several in there right now. Listen online. Go to Twitter, and you can follow us there, @WayInSports. Just wanted to give that out real quick before we get started. And Trey, I got to call my first NBA basketball game. I was the play-by-play the other night, the commentator. I had a color guy with me. And, you know, it was a lot harder than I thought. So I have a lot more respect for people that call basketball games. And it makes radio a lot easier. Actually, doing this tonight, I feel calm, relaxed. And that's a good thing. But the Bulls and the Heat was a game I called. And I knew game three, Trey, was that game for the Bulls. They had to win. That was their first game back at home. So tell me how disappointed you are, really. I mean, the Bulls won the first game. They come back to Chicago with some momentum. So tell me how disappointed you are they're down 3-1 right now.
Well, you know, with the injuries the Bulls have and with, you know, Derrick Rose only coming back for the gold medal game or game eight, you know, it's really hard for you to think about, you know, they're without Luol Deng and Kirk Heinrich, who really has been a defensive wizard for that team. And they're really playing without, you know, those three guys, which are all very, very important in their offense. So I think game one was kind of a surprise. I think they sort of, you know, they caught the Heat napping, and they thought the Heat probably thought they could walk through the series a little bit, and they got caught off guard. But then the Heat have really just crushed them. And, you know, it's not a surprise to me, Tarvin, when you look at the guys. I mean, you know, starting at forward, you have a guy named Jimmy Butler, and he has 19 points tonight. But, I mean, would you rather have Jimmy Butler, or would you rather have Luol Deng in there going up against Chris Bosh? So, you know, I'm not surprised. I mean, I know Nate Robinson's been a darling of the postseason for a lot of folks, especially in Chicago. But, you know, again, these players are usually bench players for a reason. And, you know, like Nate Robinson going over 12 for the game before, they're going to have really bad nights because they're not generally starting, and there's a reason for that. So, you know, not surprised, Tarvin. You know, obviously I wish the series was a little more even just for, you know, better basketball, and I don't really – you know, follow basketball for a specific team other than my team who's out. But so I'd love to have seen a better series for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, Joshua Shaw in the chat room says Derrick Rose is a wimp. He was cleared to play in March, and he still hasn't played. And I'm with Joshua on this. I mean, you're the leader of that team you're supposed to be. They're fighting for their life. They're outmanned. They already have a lot of injuries, and you're not going to come step up and be a leader. So if I'm the Bulls, I'm done with him as well. But let's look at this Bulls-Heat matchup. I mean, you know, the Heat lost that first game with a little rust. You know, they swept the Bucks, had a few days to rest. And look at San Antonio, what they did. You know, they lost to Golden State, and that was rust. So really, it's almost good to lose a game on purpose sometimes in that first round, Trey, than to come back and have that big of a break because, man, I mean, the rust has showed the first game with those two. But did you get to see game three where the – LeBron James got pushed down and flopped?
I didn't see that play now.
Oh, he got a technical foul. I think he threw an elbow, but, you know, a guy came and pushed him, and he fell down. He flopped and acted like he was dead. The guy got ejected from the game. But I want to ask you real quick, Trey, about Dwayne Wade. What is wrong with Dwayne Wade? He is not himself, and I bet you anything when this season is over, you're going to hear he's having surgery. So tell me, I mean, Miami to me looks very vulnerable, Trey, with a Dwayne Wade, you know, limping in because LeBron can't do it by himself, I don't believe, and it's going to get tougher. Say they beat the Bulls, they're going to have a tough Pacers team to get by and possibly, you know, a Golden State, San Antonio, or Memphis. So it's just going to get harder every series. So how are they going to win without Wade, and what's wrong with it?
Well, I think Wade's clearly got an injury with a I don't know if it's a knee or a leg. I mean, when you see him play, he's wincing. He's definitely not flashing around. I mean, you can tell he really doesn't have the speed and the way to get to the rim. And obviously, Dwayne Wade is a guy who needs to get to the rim for his game to really sort of, you know, matter. Now tonight he's, you know, 12 points, 2 rebounds, 6 assists. I mean, he's having a pretty good all around game for the Heat. But, I mean, when it comes down to a better defender, and again, he's not getting defended very well in the series. I think, you know, if you're talking about a matchup where the Pacers are really good defensively, and George has been phenomenal. I mean, you look at his numbers against Carmelo Anthony on defense, and he kind of shuts him down. So, I mean, you put a guy like that, now you're probably going to put him on LeBron, but even if he's on a secondary defender like Wade, I mean, you're going to see Wade's numbers really struggle against a great defender like George, or even, man, imagine Memphis on defense against this guy.
Now, Miami, you know, Dwayne Wade was actually questionable a few hours before the game. Maybe he wasn't going to play. He was going to sit this one out. But the interesting thing to me right now, Trey, we're in the fourth quarter with 7:48 left, fourth period, excuse me. The Bulls are up 81-79. And tell me the chances if, I mean, this is a big if they hold on to win this game, what's the chances of them coming back and winning game six at home?
I'll be honest. If the Bulls hold on here, you know, I just don't think they'll last another game. I mean, they're going to sneak a game out here and there. And if I was the Heat, I would have sat Dwayne Wade for this game just because, you know he's got some injuries and you know the rest is going to matter. I think the reason that he played is probably hoping they could go ahead and clinch tonight and then they have that rest until they play what looks to be the Pacers. But for me, I think he'd have got more out of resting Wade because, you know, you got to look long term if you're the Heat. I don't know that a hobbling Dwayne Wade is going to get you to the championship this year. I mean, Bosh is just, I don't think he's enough, and they've actually struggled. I mean, with other players. I mean, Ray Lewis isn't playing tonight. That's a big deal. You know, when Ray Lewis is going to actually, you know, how much he can play. So, you know,
Ray Allen.
Depending on that. Yeah, sorry, Ray Allen. Sorry, Ray Lewis. Yeah, Ray Lewis, he's not playing tonight either. So Ray Allen is playing tonight. I apologize, but he's not playing well. I was looking at somebody else. But, I mean, Ray Allen, he's a piece of this puzzle too, Tarvin. And my point with that was, you know, will Ray Allen make the impact that he did with the Celtics in the playoffs? We certainly haven't seen him really step up and have a big game.
So tell me about Robinson on the Bulls. Is he overrated, Trey, or are you buying into the hype?
I am not buying into the hype at all. I think he is having a great postseason, playing in a role that obviously I don't think he's meant for. I don't think he's a starting type player. I mean, he's going to have way too many games where he goes 0-for-12 from the field. Again, tonight 16-6 assists. That's great. He may get it done tonight, but he's not the kind of guy who can carry a series or can carry a team in the regular season.
Yeah, I think Nate is getting – I mean, he's played well, don't get me wrong. I mean, he's played great at times. The Bulls have really needed him with their injuries, but he's way overrated in America's eyes, really. I think everybody's thinking he's this great player, but physically he's just not. I mean, LeBron James is a great player. Look how dominant physically he is. But I want to stay in the East with you, Trey. Let's move over before we move to the West. Real quick, the Pacers. Knicks, any surprise to you in this series? I mean, Carmelo Anthony, where are you? I think they're putting a missing person hat out for Carmelo Anthony because the Pacers have dominated this series. They've taken away the three-point shot of New York. So how does New York respond to this, Trey? They're down 3-1 to a very good Indiana.
I'm a little surprised. I mean, I had the Knicks in seven, so, I mean, obviously you've got to be a little surprised if you made that prediction, but – you know, after watching this series progress, I've been less and less surprised because, you know, the Knicks have that one-player phenomenon. I mean, if Melo has a bad game, I mean, really, it has to be J.R. Smith. But J.R. Smith is an extremely streaky player, and again, you're relying on a bench player, you know, for your scoring. I mean, so where are the other guys who start on that team? Where has Jason Kidd been? I mean, I can't – has he even scored in this postseason, Tarvin? I mean, at all? So you wonder, I mean, if they are really relying on a six-man in Melo, you know, a good defensive player and a couple good defensive players, the Pacers have, then certainly they're going to cause problems for, you know, a streaky Melo and a streaky J.R. Smith. And, you know, Melo can't do it all on his own. He's got to have help.
Well, I mean, looking at the Knicks, I mean, they're just – they were hot at the wrong time. I mean, they looked good towards the end of the season. They looked – I was even buying into the Knicks, Trey. I was fool's gold, really. And you can't do a – you can't run a one-man team and win in the NBA playoffs. It's just not going to happen. Like you said, Kidd hasn't even scored. I mean, that's unbelievable to play like he plays and not even score a basket. So Carmelo Anthony is not to blame. It's just the entire Knicks team. But if you look at the successful teams right now, you see the word team. You see team basketball being played. The Knicks are the farthest thing, Trey, from a team that I've seen in this whole entire playoff.
I completely agree. And that's exactly why, you know, they're having such a problem with the Pacers who play. You know, they have so many guys who actually contribute in different ways, you know, defense, rebounding, scoring. I mean, they have several guys who could actually score 20 a night, and you know that, so they don't have to rely on just one guy shooting 30 times.
Yep, and you know, we'll move over to the West in tonight's game. We have I think Memphis is playing tonight, right? Memphis and OKC. Memphis, it's not a surprise without Westbrook, Trey. Memphis up 3-1. Do you think they close them out in OKC tonight, or do you think they're going to OKC is going to win and go back to Memphis?
I think it'll go back to Memphis tonight. Yeah, not surprised at the overall outcome of this series. I mean, defensively, Memphis is just so strong. And, you know, unfortunately, Kevin Durant by himself is in the same sort of situation that Melo is in. I mean, Carmelo Anthony and Kevin Durant are probably thinking, man, you know, give me some sort of help. I mean, because without Westbrook, you're seeing, I mean, Durant's had some phenomenal games. I mean, he has been producing at such a high level in this series. But they've been getting really nothing from anyone else. And they, you know, Westbrook's replacement has been playing okay. But Serge Ibaka hasn't really been there for the Thunder. So, you know, you're seeing that this offense, they really need a third guy. They're really missing James Harden in this series without Westbrook there. So, you know, I think Memphis gets it done, but not tonight.
Okay, Trey, pretend that Westbrook, you know, he's hurt, but Harden is with OKC. How far do you think OKC goes with even just the Harden on the team with Westbrook being out?
I mean, with James Harden on the team, they can go to the finals. I mean, he's a guy who at times carried them last year when Westbrook was, you know, Westbrook has progressed each season he's played. He's gotten better and better. And so Westbrook was better this year than he was last year. But, you know, James Harden was a guy who, when Westbrook was streaky or was having a bad night, he really could pick up that team. I think, you know, at times they used Harden the wrong way with him and Westbrook on the floor. Sometimes it was very odd. But, you know, with him starting and, you know, given that sort of carrying the ball down the court and being able to drive and dish to Kevin Durant, that's what they're missing, Carmen. They're really missing that guy on the floor who's the general who could move the ball around and have Durant get some open space.
Yeah, I really am very impressed with what I've seen Durant do in this series. But it just goes to show you, like LeBron, when he was by himself at Cleveland, I mean, it's just hard to win at all. And even if they get past this game or this series and beat Memphis, they're probably not going to beat San Antonio or Golden State. It's probably just not going to happen. So, I mean, Durant, I think Westbrook might get some more money now, Trey, that he's showing really his value to this team. But back to Harden, I think he had to leave because you see how good he is. I mean, he's the best player on Houston. He's the only reason they're in the playoffs. So, I mean, really, he was a bench player last year, Trey. I just can't get that through my head either, how James Harden came off the bench when he was the best player on a team like Houston.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, certainly he's finding his sort of, you know, limelight in Houston because he's the man. And there he was, the sixth man. And really what it came down to was having him and Westbrook on the floor, they're just too similar. They were just, you know, both the guys who just all they wanted to do was drive and shoot. And you can't have two guys on the floor when you have Kevin Durant there as well. I mean, it didn't work out very well at times last year, including the NBA Finals. But, you know, James Harden is certainly coming to his own.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to pick the Grizzlies tonight. I know they're a 5-point underdog. The Grizzlies are in OKC. I have to pick the Grizzlies to end this series now. I mean, the Thunder, even if they win, they know it's just a long road, you know, a hill to climb. I just don't know if they have what it takes right now. And it's not Durant's fault. He's doing all he can do. They have no help. Unless they get help tonight, Trey, it's going to be 4-1. This series is over.
Oh, absolutely. It's all going to come down to what help does Durant get, if any?
Well, we're just a few minutes away from our interview with Brian. He'll be calling in shortly. So let's move to tomorrow night. I mean, San Antonio, a veteran team, Trey, they lead Golden State 3-2. Did this game 5 and this win by San Antonio really just take the air out of Golden State? Do you think they have a chance to come back and win this series now?
I mean, I think they do because they've been playing. I mean, with Steph Curry, I mean, you just never know. But, man, I'll tell you, with Golden State, what I just keep thinking is, man, how good would they have been with Curry playing so well and if they had David Lee? I mean, this team is actually really scary. But without David Lee, you know, you got to think, man, it's just unfortunate for a team like Golden State who's it's been so long since they've been good. And for them to have this kind of injury, I just keep thinking about David Lee, how good he is. But I think they have a shot because, you know, Steph Curry can get hot. And, you know, if he puts up 40, I mean, it's really hard to beat them. But, you know, and, of course, you know, Klay Thompson, I mean, what he's a good shooter. But, you know, last night he had such a problem finding his shot. So we'll have to see. I think the veteran team will win out, Harvin. But I think if it goes to seven, I think the Spurs will eventually take it. But I wouldn't be surprised if it goes seven and it's a late game, you know, heroics. But this series is probably the best we've seen so far.
Well, you said it right. You know, like, if he can score 40, if he gets hot, it's hard. When you have a player like that on your team, you're never out of it. So Golden State coming back home, and I don't think their confidence is shot at all. I mean, I think, you know, going into this playoffs, I don't think anybody really saw Golden State beating San Antonio, staying on the same court. A lot of people didn't even have Golden State making it to this round. But I'm wondering if a game six, you know, it takes a lot of energy going back on the road, an old team heading to Golden State and then coming back for seven. I mean, a game seven, I might take Golden State, Trey, because of their youth in a way and the wear and tear of the Spurs, seven games. I think it might be too much. I mean, if Golden State can win game six, I'm going to pull like crazy for them to win game seven, Trey. This is a great story. But it just seems that every game, San Antonio's defense starts making more adjustments, and it's like they have almost figured this team out. That does concern me.
Yeah, I mean, and you really do. And I know, well, there's people who think, you know, basketball isn't as big a game of adjustments, but it, you know, as, you know, say football is, but it actually is. And that's kind of, you know, one of the criticisms the Knicks have seen is they're not making the adjustments to the lineup. And, you know, one of the things that the Spurs, I think, have done well is adjust sort of to the hot shooting of, you know, whether it's Thompson or Curry, because if they both hot, they're both hot, and there's not much you can do, I mean, with two guys scoring that way. But, you know, sort of it's been, you know, either or. They've had a good job of sort of bottling up one of them, and they can beat Golden State. They're very beatable without David Lee down there in the front court. So, you know, Tarvin, I think that what I like about San Antonio winning the series and why I think they will is because if it does go to Game 7, which I think it will, you know, you're talking about a veteran team who's not going to be scared or intimidated or overly hyped for that Game 7. And we all know the pressure of Game 7. People, you know, in the sporting world have talked about, you know, how Game 7s are different. And I think if Golden State goes to a Game 7, you know, it's going to be the Spurs' advantage because of that.
Yeah, then let's just move forward. Let's pretend game, you know, San Antonio wins, Memphis wins. Give me your prediction on this series, Trey. I can really see San Antonio struggling inside. I mean, Memphis is a bully down low. They have some bullying players. They're very physical. Do you think San Antonio matches up well with Memphis if they both meet?
Yeah, I actually do. And, you know, the big concern I've always had with Memphis is they still don't have, is they don't have a guy who can take over a game. And that causes problems if you're going against an Oklahoma City with Westbrook and Durant, or even if they were going against the Clippers, say, you know, who had, you know, a Chris Paul who could take over a game. And I know that they got, you know, the Clippers are out now, and, you know, they struggled their own ways. But, you know, what I do like about Memphis, though, is if you're looking at San Antonio really doesn't have, and I know, you know, that premier player, and I know, you know, you have Ginobili who's stepped up big, and you certainly have, you know, Tim Duncan who's having a great year, but San Antonio really is the embodiment of team play, too. So you have two teams, Memphis and San Antonio, who spread the ball around. They play great defense. So, you know, Memphis is a little younger, so maybe you do give them the nod. I mean, Marc Gasol has been phenomenal. I mean, his defense, I mean, Tarvin, it's defensive player of the year. I mean, he earned it, buddy.
Man, I mean, just watching him play, I mean, I just don't see how he does it. I mean, I'm sure his brother's jealous right now as he's watching the playoffs, but this Memphis team is the closest thing to a team, you know, definition looking at what they have to play. I'm just very impressed they lost their best player, and look at them. They're still going. And just a quick update, Miami is up 90-86. With 3:46 left. Trey, this is not looking good for Chicago. They've lost a lot of momentum, and it's getting crunch time, it's getting LeBron time. Now they're up 91-86. So very disappointing if you're a Bulls fan. What do you do with Rose next year? Does he come back to play, or how? I mean, I don't know, Trey. Is he going to be ready mentally? I have no idea.
You know, I don't know if folks follow Sports Pickle on Twitter or on Facebook or whatever, but they had an interesting Derrick Rose email, where it was like, you know, a picture in a Derrick Rose's Gmail account, and it was like a fake email from Robert Griffin III, and it was like, hey, my ACL surgery is going, rehab's going great. What about you? You know, I mean, just, you know, and then there was the coach who was like, hey, any chance we're going to play tonight? So it just, I'm baffled by Derrick Rose, and I think a lot of people are. I don't know what his real holdup is. I think we all speculate that he has some sort of mental problem or, you know, can he jump off his left foot? I mean, we really don't know what it actually is, because it seems to all accounts that at least the team docs seem to think that he's okay to play. So, you know, when it comes to next year, Tarvin, if it is mental, I mean, it's just kind of, that's kind of over, you know, I mean, you've seen it throughout sports that, you know, great physical ball players who've had great seasons and great careers hit some mental snag, and then, you know, some of them don't recover. So if it is mental with him, Tarvin, and now he doesn't feel like he can ever be the same type of player, I mean, if Derrick Rose can't slash and get to the rim and use his quick slashing game and, you know, going off the dribble, and if he feels hesitant, even if he comes back, is he going to be effective? And that's my concern for this whole Derrick Rose saga is, you know, if he does come back, is he going to be the same player, because he doesn't, you know, he's not sure in his own, you know, ACL.
Yeah, I mean, this is a story we'll follow, but I'm not really, I don't care if he comes back or not, to tell you the truth. I'm just tired of the whole drama surrounding him. And so if he comes back, great, but I think he lost a lot in the locker room. But Trey, it is 9:30 right now. We have our guest online with us, Brian Paul. I may have to mute Trey a couple of minutes during this thing, so while you're talking, you may have to take over. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce Brian right now. How's it going, Brian? Great to have you back.
Good. How you doing, Brian?
I'm doing good. I mean, that's a great name you have, Brian, by the way. I just wanted to say that for you.
And you spell it the right way, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks for joining us, coming back on. I know a lot of people are interested, you know, for your next interview here and for you to discuss a lot of things that's going on with XL Sports Recruiting. I mean, is everything going good with you?
Oh, doing great. You know, we just launched our new website, so we're pretty excited about that. You know, we're out on the web now, and actually we're running a promo for all of the athletes now. It's like the first 250, we're actually doing an upgraded profile. And by upgraded, I mean it's our generally you would pay for it. It's like a $300 value. And we're giving those away to, like, the first 250 athletes just to get them onto the site and get them familiar with what we do. So, you know, we've got a lot of excitement around that. We've done some, you know, local things here to promote it and also on the Internet. So pretty excited.
That sounds, I mean, anytime you can give something free away, too, it catches people's eye. So how close are you to the 250?
Right now, I mean, we just launched it, so right now we're about half the way there. So we're, you know, we still have some open spots, and you know, we're still going out. We've been doing a lot of stuff in the Orlando area here. We've been going out to a lot of the high schools and doing a lot of things with the AAU and stuff like that to promote it. You know, we're doing a lot of it online too with Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that. So we reach out beyond the local area, but we've had a lot of success. A lot of coaches going on there and doing their free profiles. You know, so we're building that good network, you know, that we generally had through Facebook and other means. We're being able to do that right in a one spot location now for everybody. So
talk a little bit about XL Sports Recruiting. I mean, it's just not football. I just want people to understand this is not just football or basketball. This is everything, correct? Men and women's sports.
That is correct. Actually, one of the things that differentiates us from our competitors is, you know, yeah, there are other ones that do all sports, and we focus on everything. I mean, everything you can think of under the sun, from lacrosse to water polo, golf, tennis, football, baseball, all the main sports. And we also do male and female. But one of the things, the aspects for us is, you know, we obviously our bulk of our business is for college recruiting. So anywhere within the United States and, you know, Canada and whatnot, we're recruiting for these sports. But we also do international recruiting, too. So there's a lot of athletes and a lot of talent over in Europe, Asia, Africa, the Caribbean, South America, you know, for sports like soccer, basketball, baseball, golf. And so we're able to kind of work to bring some of those athletes over as well to, you know, help a lot of these colleges out that are seeking that type of level of talent. So And one of the things for us is, you know, obviously you've had Delmont, my VP of recruiting, on before, you know, and he played overseas in Europe, so he's got that tie to a lot of recruiters overseas and a lot of schools. But also our VP is actually, he's originally from Hungary, kind of tied into the soccer world. So we have our hands kind of into the international market as well. So we're kind of, you know, pretty versed out there.
Okay, like the camps you talk about, can you talk about, I guess, the camps for just, let's just talk about college football for a minute. Tell us how the camps work for the, that you do for college football, maybe the dates. I mean, maybe not exact dates, but just, you know, estimates.
Sure. Generally, I mean, right now we've been doing a lot with, you know, we've been kind of partnering up with camps that are already in existence across the United States. So, for instance, when you go on our website, you know, it's not just the profiles that are on there. We have the information resource center, but we also have camps and clinics, academies, and training. And so we have partners all across the United States that we've been partnering up with. We deal with some semi-pro football leagues, World Minor League Football, for instance. So they have a lot of training academies. We do a lot with D1 training centers. So we've been sending a lot of these of our athletes to these, you know, camps and clinics and combines and whatnot. What our goal is by next season, we're actually going to roll out our own. So we're going to have our own combines, our own camps. We're working with Nike Combat and a couple other companies to put together these things, do soccer camps, football camps, baseball, basketball, so that we can basically have coaches come and be recruited. And then in phase two, what we want to do is be able to roll that out to younger ages too, so we've got them preparing, you know, at the middle school age and kind of working their way up. So
the age limit, and maybe there's not. What age do you start actually working with a kid that you know, hey, is going to be a great football player, basketball player? What's the ideal age that you want to start?
Generally for us, I mean, we normally start around 14 or 15. You know, we start working with them at that age. Usually, you know, they're middle school and they're either doing like AAU, Pop Warner, or whatnot. Or if it's another sport, you know, we're usually working with them in the club level. We've got a lot of kids in soccer, a lot of kids in baseball and whatnot. And we work with them at a young age to kind of get them on track so when they're getting ready to go into high school, they're able to, you know, go on for the high school team and you know, make it and understand what the process is. So we don't want to necessarily start off, you know, working with somebody that's, let's say, a sophomore in high school or a junior, because we want to get them early enough to where we can kind of guide them through that process and you know, get them in the right direction so that they're ready. And a lot of them don't realize that you actually have to start preparing, you know, relatively early. You can't just wait until your, you know, junior, senior year before you start making these, you know, going out and seeking recruitment and doing all these other things. So we have a tendency to start, you know, generally, like I said, 14, 15. And with some of these camps, we're actually going to start doing, you know, like 12 and up so that we have them prepared for that.
So now the NCAA is looking into, you know, making recruiting to where there's really no limitations of how many times a coach can contact a recruit via text message, cell phone, email, whatnot. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, that's one of the things it's a lot of lines, you know, a lot of with coaches nowadays, they've got to be careful. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, we've seen this happen a lot of times with coaches making the mistake of, you know, kind of crossing the line. You know, me personally, I think, you know, there should be some limitations. I mean, obviously, you know, there's coaches, and we've dealt with some coaches in our personal, you know, dealings that, you know, have kind of gone a little bit overboard in the aspect of recruiting. You know, we want to be that, you know, kind of mentor, that middle person for these athletes so that they understand what their rights are. Because a lot of them, you know, the coaches know what NCAA rules are and what they need to do to be able to recruit. But a lot of these kids don't. So we kind of act as their liaison and kind of educate them on, hey, here's what you can, what you can't do. You know, and so they're pretty much educated on, you know, what they need to be doing on their end and what's, you know, allowed and what's not allowed so that they watch their back. Because the last thing we want is one of our athletes to lose out on being, you know, getting a scholarship because the coach kind of overstepped their boundaries. So
how often do you see that, really? Like, you see a coach promise the world maybe to a kid, and they really, I mean, I wouldn't say lie to them, but just trying to sell them to come to their school. How do you protect the kid from that, really?
You know, that's a good question. And you see that actually a lot more than, you know, you would hope to see it. And the thing about it is, with us, you know, we kind of basically lead them through the whole entire recruiting process. We're not just, you know, once they start to get offers, we let them go. we want to kind of facilitate that. So we work with them, obviously, you know, setting up visits, yes. whether it's an official visit or unofficial visit, and kind of working with that and kind of giving them some guidance throughout that process. You know, and if there's a coach that's promising them, which happens a lot, you know, they'll say, hey, we're going to get you out here for this or that. And they may be extending their welcome because they've got already X amount of kids, you know, offered scholarships too. So we kind of, we are aware of, you know, these different programs that we work with and what they've got going on. So we can kind of lead the kid into the right direction and say, hey, you know, let's take a step back. Let's analyze this, you know, get the parents involved so that we make sure that they're, you know, they're aware that I don't want them to get their hopes up thinking that they're going to get a scholarship somewhere where, you know, we've got to keep those options open. So. And I've had a lot of kids, you know, believe it or not, a lot of kids that say, hey, I'm getting, you know, an offer from this school or I'm getting some interest from this school, so I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to bother to waste my time going on a visit to this school or that school. And what we want to do is make sure that they keep all those options open because, you know, like you said, the coaches, they, you know, they can promise the world to the kid, but, you know, when it comes down to the end, when they're ready to make a decision and they say, oh, sorry, we don't have anything available for them, then by the time the athlete's already lost out on the, you know, backup plan. So we want to make sure that they keep those options open and, you know, work with them to kind of guide them through that.
So I know you guys deal with overseas, Olympic, stuff like that, but tell us again about the military in case people missed it last time. How you deal with the military kids that are having to travel all the time, having to move up and move and change locations?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of obviously kids that are, you know, over in Europe and Asia and whatnot that are, you know, stationed with parents overseas, and we actually we're partnered with an organization here in the States that works with the military, and they work with specifically in sports. So there's, you know, kids that are overseas that are participating in either club sports or high school sports over, you know, in Germany or whatnot, Italy, and so we work with them and kind of you know, get them prepared so that they're, you know, they're able to be recruited. It's kind of no different than if they were here in the United States. You know, they're basically, we're making sure that they're eligible, that they're going through all the same processes, that we're checking with their grades, making sure that they're taking the right, you know, testing. Some of them in the cases, they, you know, there are on base sites where they can take like SAT and SAT, but if not, we make sure that they have it arranged to where they can come here and take it. But a lot of times, you know, a lot of that stuff is facilitated on base. And we can get them prepared so that when they're ready to be recruited, they can come over here, you know, take the visit, do whatever they got to do, and then be recruited.
Okay, so Brian, tell us what you want the people out there listening to tonight's show, people in the archives, what do you want them to know about XFL Sports Recruiting, really, in a nutshell?
Yeah, the biggest thing about us is, you know, the thing that separates us mostly from our competition is we go based on what we call the three P's. It's preparation, passion, and purpose. And basically, we ensure that we, you know, we're preparing our athletes, you know, all the young men and women for life after the game, not just, you know, to get recruited, but also beyond. Are they making the right decisions? Are they selecting a college in a program that's going to fit their needs so that once their, you know, their college career is done, that they're going out and they're getting a job that it's going to be productive for them. So, you know, we like to do things like that by providing them with the principles that they can take away from the sport and apply in everyday life, such as leadership, teamwork, dedication, and commitment, and these sorts of things. You know, the other thing I said is we're very passionate. We look forward to what we can do with them every day, and we find joy in it. So it's not for us. It's not like, you know, we don't see each athlete as a number. We see each of them as one of our members of our own family. So it's like basically, you know, it's not a business opportunity for us. So it's an opportunity for us to kind of groom them and kind of guide them through this process. And we understand that there's an importance of, you know, building and nurturing our relationship with the athletes. So, you know, like Delma kind of said last time, it's one of those things where we spend a lot of time on the phone. You know, me personally, I've dealt with a lot of athletes myself. You know, they call me all hours of the day, and if they have a question or conversation, you know, kind of help them with it, give them some mentorship, some tips, and kind of help them through that. But we work with, like I said, we work with every athlete through every stage of recruiting and even beyond, even when they're in college and they're doing well and performing. You know, we still check in on them and see if, you know, if there's anything we can do to help facilitate it, if their process is going good. If they're looking to transfer out of a program, maybe they get into a program and, you know, they're having a situation where they're not getting play time and they want to be transferred out, we can work, you know, to kind of facilitate that. And we've also done some stuff where we facilitate, you know, from the college to pro level. So we've kind of like been middleman with that. But we, you know, we are tied in with so many different organizations. You know, like I mentioned before, with minor league football, with U.S. Soccer Academy. You know, we do a lot of things with AAU, which is based here in Orlando. So we're kind of the one-stop shop for recruiting. You know, we kind of cover it all. You know, like I said, between the recruiting and the profiles and stuff like that, the camps, the clinics, we have a resource center, so we educate them on the eligibility side, test prep, you know, recruiting questions and FAQs. We offer different services such as like video editing, if they need help with that, admissions essay, proofreading assistance in editing.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of offer the whole gamut, so to speak. So
that's good stuff, Brian. And I want to thank you for coming on. But before you go, I want you to give everyone ways they can contact you, Twitter, Facebook, whatever you want.
Sure. Again, the website, for everyone to check out the website, it's www.xlxcelcollegerecruiting.com. Facebook, you can find us on Facebook. This is XL College Recruiting. And actually, I'm sorry, XL Sports Recruiting. If you type in facebook.com/XL Sports REC, you'll be able to find us that way. And on Twitter, we're just XL Sports REC.
Well, it's great stuff tonight, Brian, as always, and I look forward to having you in the future. And great, good luck with everything this year in the recruiting world.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having us on. You know, we definitely appreciate you guys, you know, having us on every time and being able to talk more about the recruiting aspect. So we definitely appreciate it.
You're very welcome, and we really appreciate you. That was Brian Pauls, XL Recruiting. I mean, just a great guy, great individuals that work with him and run that company. So everyone listening to this show, please check them out. I mean, it's this day and age, so many kids are getting the shaft, really, when it comes to recruiting, when it comes to advice. Kids are vulnerable, and sometimes agents, coaches, and even parents can lead them in the wrong direction sometimes. So it's always good to use guys like this that start you at a young age and can work with you from the time you're in your early teens on up to high school. And I really like the part about, you know, helping them with their tape to send to college, helping them with their essay, proofreading it for them, making sure the grammar's right, stuff like that, more than just what's on the field, but just in the classroom as well. And I want to thank Brian again for coming. Great job as always. And we are the Staff Pick Show on Blog Talk Radio tonight. I want to thank everyone for joining us. And we have Trey Patterson with us, and we're going to take a caller. I believe this is Jonathan. What's going on?
Great interview, by the way. That was awesome. That was an awesome interview. I ran late at work. I apologize for being late to the show. I was able to tune into you guys for a little bit here and there. And yeah, man, awesome interview, Brian. Awesome interview.
Oh, I appreciate it. Brian's a great guy. I mean, doing what I like is always in the best interest of the kid. And Trey is in the studio right now. Trey, if you want to back in, let me know. I had to mute Trey for a moment, and I think Trey was crying. I must have said something to him. I don't know what's wrong with Trey, but he'll be back with us shortly. But just a minute ago, Jonathan, the Miami Heat finished off the Chicago Bulls 4-1. Give me any chance right now that Miami loses the next round, and it's probably going to be against Indiana.
I give Indiana a 50% chance of beating Miami because the series starts at 0-0. Anything could happen. You know, Dwayne Wade could get nicked up. You know, Chicago played Miami very tough. My hats off to my Bulls. They had a fantastic season. But I definitely think Miami has to be the favorites to advance to the NBA Finals.
Oh, definitely they're the favorites. It's just going to be hard to beat a team with that much firepower. If you can, good job. I mean, I think Memphis is a team that maybe could just because of how they play. But when you don't have a LeBron or Dwayne Wade, I think with a limping Dwayne Wade, Jonathan, I think they could be in some deep trouble.
Yeah, Dwayne Wade is not 100% healthy. I think Miami could be in trouble against Memphis. And the one advantage Memphis has over Miami is they'll beat you up inside, and Miami's obviously proven they're weak inside against Chicago, where I believe they got out-rebounded every game. So is that really going to be a factor? Of course not, but Tayshaun Prince is a very good defender. And that's where you have to give Memphis the edge. Mike Conley can hold down the point guard spot. Tayshaun France will just badger, you know, Mike Miller, Ray Allen, Dwayne Wade, even LeBron. He'll badger him. And then you have Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol, who will beat up on Chris Bosh. I would love to see Memphis and Miami play in the final. I think it would be really exciting to watch.
Definitely. Well, Trey, I want to move on real quick to college football. If we can talk a little bit of college football, I just want your thoughts real quick on Notre Dame, Trey, you know, dropping Michigan from the schedule. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, I guess 2 points. I'll make one for Notre Dame and then the one not from Notre Dame. One is you knew Notre Dame had to drop somebody. With the going to the ACC schedule, they had to drop some of these traditional rivalries. The question, and I think it's a legitimate one from both Michigan and Notre Dame fans who I've heard, is why the Purdue game, you know, why do you keep the Purdue rivalry over the Michigan rivalry? So, you know, legitimate question from a lot of fans from both sides. You understand what Notre Dame had to do, at least for somebody. But, you know, if you're going to keep a rivalry carving, why keep the Purdue over the Michigan?
Well, Purdue is in state, right? I mean, it's in Indiana. Notre Dame's in Indiana.
Right.
So maybe
absolutely.
That's a part of that. Maybe that's one reason, you know, right there we're looking at. But when I look at it, I don't appreciate Brady Hoke, the head coach of Michigan, you know, coming out and just taking shots at Notre Dame about doing that. Be a class act, guy. You're Michigan right now. You haven't done anything. Your team hasn't done anything except get blown out by Alabama the opening game last year, Jonathan. I mean, really, Brady Hoke, you're going to come out and call people out. Really?
Well, if I was Brady Hoke, I would have done the same thing. I wouldn't use the word chickening out, but anybody who uses the word chickening out just gets knocked down a level. But the fact that Notre Dame is dropping Michigan in favor of Purdue and Michigan State is disgusting. To me, it is just, you know what, though? It's a classic Notre Dame move. It really is. What's the easy way out for Notre Dame? Notre Dame always does this. They won't join a conference. Why? Because they enjoy playing Army and Navy and Purdue and Air Force and the random B2 team every year. You know, if Notre Dame manned up, they would have kept Michigan. They would have, you know, they would have had a rivalry. They would have kept them home with USC, and they would have had Stanford and Michigan State. You know, they would have actually had a real rivalry game. Purdue is a rival because they're in state. They're not a rival on the field.
Yeah, well, I agree. And in order to be a rival, Trey, you have to actually compete with a team, I think, in a way, over a period of time. But Notre Dame, Trey, does play a hard schedule in ways. So it's not like they drop Michigan just to put a cupcake in. Notre Dame's not used to playing these FCS schools. So Michigan State, Purdue, I understand. And keeping Stanford, Navy, you have to keep Navy, and Southern Cal. Those three will never be touched.
Well, I mean, Tarvin, I agree on actually, you know, in fact, if you look at the last years, Michigan State's been a better opponent than Michigan has. Now, I think Michigan State's a great keep. I think the only time that I really question is the Purdue. And, you know, the in-state rivalries, no matter if they're one-sided or not, are hard to give up because of in-state politics. I mean, that's the reason why Florida State and Florida had to play each other, which the legislators got together and said, you're going to play each other. And that's the same thing that's happening in Texas and Texas A&M, because that in-state rivalry is so important for, like, the economy and that kind of stuff. So, you know, that may be there's other things in play. So, you know, as a football fan or as a football guy who watches these things, Darvin, I'm going to say that I disagree with keeping Purdue, but I certainly understand there may have been some greater, let's say, state forces in play here.
Yeah, but the problem I have is with Brady Hoke. If you're going to say something, if you're going to judge another team, an AD or a school, at least be relevant. And that's what I'm saying. If this was Alabama calling them out, LSU, Ohio State, somebody other than Michigan. I mean, what has Michigan done, Trey, to be able to say someone's a coward, really, in doing that? Even though they played Alabama, big deal. I mean, they got beat down. That's the only issue I have with this. I'm not a Notre Dame supporter, trust me, you know that. But I do have an issue with the coach coming out. So I want to talk real quick. I mean, this touches close to home with you and Jonathan. Florida State has a recruit, and maybe you can tell us more about it, Trey, to start with, that signed with Florida on the dotted line on signing day, but now he wants released from that scholarship. His commitment, he wants to go to Georgia or Southern Cal. I believe those are the two teams. What are your thoughts on this? Should he be released?
Well, I mean, we're talking about this five-star linebacker, Matthew Thomas. And the question is, and there's a lot of weird stuff. If you're not a guy who follows recruiting or a gal who follows recruiting, then you're kind of surprised when these kind of stories happen. They happen a lot, actually. Matthew Thomas, very strong mother, maternal figure, and she leaves the country for a couple of weeks, and then all of a sudden this happens. So this is the kid who has, strong parental, leanings toward Florida State, and now all of a sudden his mom leaves and he starts doing this. And my ultimate thing is Tarvin, you absolutely do not release him from the scholarship. I think Florida State's handling it the way that you'd want your program to handle it. They're saying, okay, well, let's have a conversation with the family when they get back in town. Let's talk about what your concerns are, because you did agree, on that letter of intent, and there's a reason why the NCAA has bound players, and so this sort of waffling or wavering, and it doesn't happen past a certain date. And, Matthew Thomas didn't have to sign on that date. He chose to. So, I agree with what Florida State's doing with how they're handling the situation. And I would not. I personally, if I'm the AD, don't let him out.
Yeah, I think if you did this, Trey, every time someone wanted to do this, then you would never be able to have a football team, man. That's my opinion of it. And Johnson, if you're on right now, if you could hang up and call back in. I'm getting a lot of background noise. I'm having to mute right now. But Trey, you know these guys can be talked to after they sign. You never know if. I mean, you could never consistently know what you were going to have every season if this happened. So I understand players leave, their mother's sick, has cancer, they want to be close to home. Something happens that matters. I don't think Florida State would have any issue if, for instance, the kid lived far away and said, hey, I want to go back home. My mother has cancer and has 6 months to live, and I want to be with her. Florida State, do you think they would really keep the kid from transferring?
No, I mean, you're right. There are definitely circumstances where I think, you have a kid, like say you have a kid from Florida who goes to USC, all of a sudden he has, issues with his family, wants to play somewhere closer to home, then I think generally, I think many of us would support that decision because it's not based on, say, football politics. Where in this situation you have the exact opposite. There's really nothing other than some sort of whimsical decision he made to all of a sudden, almost open up his recruiting again, because what he wants to do is take two visits. He wants to go back into the recruiting. So, I don't know if this kid became a diva, Tarvin, and wants to have that rush of having schools, fall all over him again. But this is why the letter of intent, this is why the NCAA went this route, is so you don't have this, I'm accepting the scholarship, now I'm going to change over. So it's not at least an endless cycle for these kids going in the fall.
Good job. Jonathan, what are your thoughts? You're a Florida State fan. Should they release him?
No. No. And Stuttman came out and said, we're not releasing him. This is ridiculous. If Matthew Thomas doesn't want to be at Florida State, he can transfer. You're going to waiver now? You haven't, you don't have to sign the letter of intent, in February. You can wait till April to sign it. All right, you signed it. You faxed it in. That is a contract. You're staying. I understand. I don't know. He's a Florida boy. He picks us. Everybody's happy. The kid has a chance to start, and now he wants to open it up. I mean, what I really want to know what's going on inside and what's really going on with this kid right now. What's the real issue here? Because obviously there's something else deeper into this issue that we don't know.
Yeah, I mean, definitely there is something going on. But I really don't want a player that doesn't want to be there. But I also don't want to give him away, possibly goes to a rival and ends up beating you later. Kids need to. They have so long to think about it. They have a lot of visits. That's why, like Jonathan said, they can sign later. But, Trey, I want to talk about a Florida State ex-coach, Damian Craig, for you. I'll go to Jonathan. Jonathan, I want to talk about Damian Craig at Florida State. He left to go to Auburn.
I mean, this is really paying dividends. The ex-Auburn quarterback in the Mobile area. This guy's landed three of the top players in Mobile. Tell me your thoughts on Damian Craig and what he's doing for Auburn, real quick.
I think he's doing a great job for Auburn. I have no problems with him going back home. I think I would have loved to test my Florida State, but you know what? I think it's great for him to go back to Auburn where he played. I have no ill will towards him. Good luck, Damian Craig, and congratulations on your success as a recruiter.
Yep, they had Deshaun Davis. He's from Biger High School in Mobile. They also got a kid, Joshua Carter. He's from St. Paul's Episcopal in Mobile. They have Cameron Pettaway in Prattville. That's close to Montgomery. And then Justin Thornton, a big defensive end out of Viger. Trey Williams, an inside linebacker for Mobile. I mean, it's just – and also the number one safety in the country, JUCO. Big kid, actually. So Auburn is focusing on the defensive side of the football, and they're getting a lot of talent. I think they could end up with a top two or three class this year in recruiting. So I'm interested to see – how the wins and losses is going to affect recruiting, Jonathan. I think that's the key for Auburn this year. How many wins are they going to get? If they come out and go 3-9 again, I think the players may hesitate. But if they come out and win 7, 8, 9 ball games, you better watch out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if Auburn wins 6 ball games, hats off to them. Obviously, they're turning around the culture. If they win 8 or 9 ball games, they're going to have a top 10 recruiting class. Mark it down right now. They're going to have a top 10 recruiting class, especially if that offense is so explosive. Because we all know people like to play for the fun offenses. You know, if Auburn has a fun offense and they need help on defense, you're going to get the defensive recruits. You're going to get the offensive guys, especially skill position. I mean, Auburn could become really, really, really dangerous in the next couple of years if Malzahn is as good a coach as I think he is.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, and I don't care what anybody says. Coaching, you have to be able to develop players, but you also have to get the players first. And you have to start getting these big players. Like Mobile was one of those areas, you know, when Tuberville was there, he could hit a couple here and there. But people don't realize LSU and Alabama have lived in Mobile. Florida State, when Damian Craig went, started getting a lot of recruits from Mobile area. There's so much talent. Just like a hotbed. So now Damian Craig came in and took some of the top players. I think he's sending a message to Nick Saban that's saying, hey, there's a new sheriff in town in Mobile.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. I just think it's great. I like to see this. And, you know, Damian Craig was a great guy when he was at Florida State. He was a great guy to us. I'll support ex-Florida State guys that left on good terms. I will. I think the world of guys who do that and they're actually going home and it's not, just bettering myself. It's, you know, I'm going back to my roots and I respect that so much. And, I mean, my hat's off to him.
Yeah, that is his hometown and everything, and that's a great place for him to be. Before we go, I want to move on to Major League Baseball real quick. I don't know if you got to watch the game, Jonathan. I think it was last Sunday night. It might have been that game where Oakland was playing and they hit a home run. Okay, they hit the home run. It was 4-3. Mm-hmm. I believe they were down. They ruled it a ground rule double. Did you get to see this?
Yes, Adam Rosales hit the home run. I mean, the 14,000 people in the Jacks thought it was a home run. Chris Perez, the pitcher for the Indians, thought it was a home run. Terry Francona thought it was a home run. The announcers for the Indians on TV said it was a home run. And the umpires come back after looking at the replay and say, no, it's not a home run. Are you kidding me? Seriously? Come on.
Yeah, well, what's the point of having, you know, Trey had to take a break just a second, but what I was saying is, what is the point of having an instant replay if you don't use it? And I don't want to hear, well, our TV wasn't good enough, we couldn't see. Hey, everybody in the world knew that was a home run. I mean, here's the deal. They just didn't want to overturn their call. Pride is a factor with some of these umpires. And one thing I've been noticing
is the attitude of these umpires. You know, I'm an umpire myself, but if a player says something to me, you know, I'll listen. You know, your job out there is to take a little verbal abuse. Sometimes it happens. But these umpires are bowing up too fast at these players, Jonathan, and it's always the player getting in trouble. So these umpires provoke the players, and then all of a sudden they kick them out of the game and they get fined. So what are your thoughts about these umpires? I think something needs to be done about it fast.
Yeah, well, the umpires have been way too trigger-happy. It's almost like they think they're bigger than the game at this rate, and that's not how it's supposed to be. We're not supposed to know who the guy behind the plate is. Okay, if we don't know your name, you did a good job. And unfortunately, we know all these guys' names. And a lot of players, including Chipper Jones, your boy, came out to Angel Hernandez, the umpire who held up the ground rule double call, is arrogant, you know, he's a jerk, and nothing nice to say about him. But there's no checks and balances. Okay, the umpires do this, and they don't get in trouble. That's the problem, is that they're not being disciplined. For the first time, I saw this one actually as an ump. I don't know if you caught it, but in the Houston Angels game, the Astros and Angels game a couple of days ago, Houston put in a reliever. The Angels bring in a pinch hitter, and then before the reliever throws a pitch, Houston's manager pulls him and puts another one. That's against the rules. The umpires on the field that day did not know that. And the umpire for that crew got suspended 2 games. That's what we need to see from these umpires more, because you just let them run wild and we're going to keep seeing ridiculous things like this.
Well, I was going to bring that up, so you stole my thunder there. So tell me, out of all the umpires they have on that field that day, how did one of them not catch this? I mean, I knew this in Little League. I mean, you can't bring a pinch – you can't bring a reliever in. If he does, he has the pitch to a batter. That's just the rule. Mm-hmm. So how did all of these umpires, and hell, how did the coach not know?
You know, I think Bo Porter, Houston's manager, I think he knew. But he was testing him. You know, it was one of the things where I think if he got caught, it was an oh well. The fact that Mike Socia went bonkers and they still looked at him and said, no, it's okay, is what just befuddles me. I mean, how do you let this slide?
You don't. You have to hold people accountable. And I do respect Major League Baseball, trust me, suspending the guy. But, I mean, that'll wake him up. But what about the other times where they missed calls, like the perfect game that was blown for Detroit, a couple years ago? And we had this happen. Every year we're seeing more and more these blatant blown calls. We see an umpire cussing a player. You know, an umpire is supposed to not use profanity on the field, cussing at other players. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah. And that happened to David Price. You know, and I heard David Price's account. And the thing that I think needs to be brought up, for people that don't know the Rays, Jeremy Hellickson is a very soft-spoken guy. Jeremy Hellickson doesn't get mad over anything. I mean, if an umpire blatantly calls a ball and it's right down the middle, he won't say a word. He just takes it in. He got ejected after that incident. When the umpire swore at David Price, which the umpire says he didn't, but I'm going to say he did, because Jeremy Hellickson went bonkers, and Jeremy Hellickson won't get mad if you shoot his dog. All right? I mean, that's the part that baffled me the most about this situation. I think, and since Joe Torre is in charge of this, and you and I both know he's been on both sides of those calls, he's going to start actually disciplining these refs like you're supposed to. It's about time. It really is.
Yeah.
And well, you need to see this across all sports.
Yeah, Trey, what do you think about this, what's going on in Major League Baseball with these umps just blatantly blowing these calls?
Well, I mean, it's been a sort of a soapbox of mine, as you well know, Tarvin, for a number of years now. I mean, I've been displeased with the officiating in Major League Baseball and really the unaccountability, if that's really a word, but the lack of accountability in Major League Baseball for umpires has always been abysmal. And it's bad in most sports, I mean, but it's been far worse in any sport than in baseball. And Angel Hernandez is a great example. The guy, if you go back and put a real tape of him, either you can lip read and see him dog cussing umpires or players and just instantly antagonizing. You know, if you're an umpire, Tarvin, and you do it on the side as well, you know that you don't take off your mask. Like, you hold that, and you'll see it now. And if you're a fan of baseball, just watch it. Watch how many times a player questions a call behind the plate, and watch how fast the umpires are removing that mask, because they're ready to get into it. And that's a problem, Tarvin, because we don't watch this game for umpires. I want them to call the balls and strikes, to call the outs. But you're seeing so many more missed calls and such lack of accountability. These guys should be getting suspended for their conduct and their missed calls.
Yeah, I saw a call the other night where, you know, it was a check swing. They appealed it to the third base umpire. He called a strike, which was in the batter. I can't remember who it was, maybe you know, but argued it. And as soon as he said anything, the umpire at third base took a motion towards him and started threw his arms up in the air and started cussing. And then they eject the batter. So, come on. I mean, even if you make the right call, you still – people take their frustrations out on umpires. They may say, oh, you missed it. Blue, you suck. But if that's as far as they go, leave it alone. I mean, if you take your mask off, like you said, Trey, all you're doing is trying to draw attention to yourself and say, hey, I'm important. I'm a part of this game now. Now I'm going to argue. If the umpire leaves his mask on, it's kind of hard to argue with him. Don't you agree?
Well, yeah, you know, I have the Rays Red Sox game on tonight as we're doing the show. And I noticed David Ortiz, there was a call outside of the strike zone, you know, borderline is what we call it in baseball. You know, who knows if it was a strike or a ball. But Ortiz was displeased, and he actually had some things to say to the umpire. The umpire left his mask on. And you could tell he just looked at him, and I could tell from the umpire he was like, I called it a strike. You know, like, and there's so many ways an umpire can defuse that situation. Ortiz was not ejected from the game. You know, he got out his displeasure in the call. The umpire took it. He clearly didn't antagonize the situation. You know, the mask didn't come off. There was no facial, you know, argument. And then Ortiz went on with the bat. The game wasn't stalled because oftentimes, you know, what Major League Baseball has such a problem with is slow games. And there's nothing that slows the game down like an umpire getting into it. Then you have an ejection from the player, the umpire, you know, the umpire then has to address the manager. And we all are just sitting here going, is this really happening? Like, did the player I'm watching just get kicked out over an umpire who is too aggressive? So, and the game went on, and it was such nice to see, given how many atrocious calls and how many antagonizing umpires I've seen recently. I was like, hey, it was done correctly, and you know, Ortiz is still in the game, and the Red Sox are going to win 9-2. So, you know, just that's the way it's supposed to happen, Darvin.
Well, Trey, I mean, looking at umpires, they need to get through their heads that they're going to miss calls sometimes. Excuse me, they're going to miss calls. They're not going to get everything right. They have to lean on each other. They have to lean on their staff, instant replay, to get it right. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter about your ego. What matters is, did you get the call right? Did you affect history? Just like the perfect game, the umpire screwed up so bad, Trey. I mean, it was terrible. I mean, how do you sleep at night and do that? So I think the players respect the umpires more than the umpires think. I just think they need to be the bigger people. They're getting paid a handsome salary to umpire these games. And I think they need to be the bigger people and actually sometimes diffuse situations instead of encouraging it. Because when I played, you know, I've been thrown out of more games than you can count, you know, looking at it. And the one thing that pissed me off the most is when I was frustrated an umpire made a bad call, that they said something smart back to me. As soon as I said something, they pop off with something. And they blew the call, and that just makes it bad because I get involved. Other players get involved, and all of a sudden you have possibly a whole team getting ejected, Jonathan. So I'm glad they're hopefully going to start, you know, putting some rules in place to hold these umpires accountable.
Yeah, and Tarvin, what I'd like to see is something, you know, how the NFL kind of started the challenge process. I think that managers should get, you know, whether you call it a flag or a beanie or something in Major League Baseball Now, I think there's some things that should be automatically reviewed, just like the NFL. We have end zone plays automatically reviewed. I think scoring plays, if you could have this. This doesn't have to be at every stadium. You know, with technology today, you could have, you know, 10 guys sitting in a booth somewhere in the world at night watching these games through live feed. And they should have a button they hit and say, nope, that scoring play is going to get reviewed, whether it's a tag at home, whether it's a home run. So you have those replayed, you know, and it can be real time. This doesn't have to be a slow process. It just takes a little technology and a little people knowing what they're doing and a little smartness. And then you should have the manager who can challenge one other play during the game. So whether it's a steal at second, which, you know, is often a missed call, or a bang-bang play at first base, which, you know, was wrong because it happened so fast, and they get one of those a game. And to me, the integrity of the game is always a problem when you have umpires involved in this kind of sort of missing calls, not knowing the rules. And I think MLB needs to come out and say, okay, we're going to get with the times. Guess what? We can all look at a monitor, and we can all get this right.
Definitely. I mean, I think it would be a great idea, because you're right. To play at second base, it's hard for an umpire unless they can get inside and see that tag, because the problem is when they come inside, they have to watch the throw. They can get nailed in the back of the head, and usually they're out of position when they make that call. So I would love to see that. That's a great idea. I don't know if they'll do that, because they just hate changing baseball. It's a pastime. I mean, it's not America's sport anymore, trust me. But I just think these guys hate to be questioned, and they hate to change. So we'll see. Before we go, real quick, give the call-in number, 646-716-5564, if you would like to call in and give us your opinion on our topics tonight. But I just want to go to college basketball. Trey Wiggins signed with Kansas. But do you know that Kentucky is still, what, a 5-2 favorite? Something like that, to win the championship. Kansas is number two. So tell me how this is going to affect the college basketball landscape, Wiggins deciding to go to Kansas instead of Kentucky.
Well, I mean, he actually picked Kansas over Florida State. He had parents who were both in the Hall of Fame, Florida State Hall of Fame. One was his mom was a two-time gold medalist, I think, and his dad was a guy who played in the NFL. So Florida State had been a longtime favorite. Leonard Hamilton was a guy who actually he knew Andrew Wiggins for the longest time, and it actually happened about last month. He started hearing that Kansas was really going to involve. I know Kentucky was the last visit. From every appearance, it was the Kansas-Florida State battle for this kid, and Kansas won out. They ended up with a number two recruiting class. I'll tell you something about Wiggins, Tarvin, that really surprised me when I heard, because you often hear a lot of people talk about recruits. You know, this is if you're comparing them to certain people. One of the guys who, again, you follow Twitter, is a guy who actually talked a lot about LeBron James in high school. And he said, you know, he was one of the people who were really hyping him up when he was in high school, you know, early on, has said this kid is the closest thing to LeBron James since then. I mean, he didn't go all out and say he is LeBron James or he's the next, but he said this kid could carry that mentally. He's that good. So if he is that good, Tarvin, imagine what LeBron James would have done in a year in college. I think that Kansas is going to be a very, very strong team. Now, there's no doubt about it. Kentucky, with the class they have right now and the talent there that's actually coming back, they're the clear favorite. But, you know, watch out for Kansas, because if this Wiggins kid is that good, he can clearly carry a team throughout the tournament.
And I heard he's the projected number one overall pick in the 2014 NBA draft. I mean, Jonathan, that's crazy. I mean, the guy never played a game in college yet.
You know who was the last high school recruit to be projected number one overall? Shabazz Muhammad. Muhammad, in high school, they had him as the number one overall pick in this year's draft before he signed with UCLA. How'd that work out for Muhammad? He's a fringe first-rounder now. Well, okay, fringe lottery pick. All right, you know, let's see how Wiggins plays in the NBA first before we anoint, I mean, in college basketball before we anoint him. Not only that, but Wiggins is somebody they talked about where he hates the spotlight. He hates the media. He doesn't want to be a part of that. So let's see how that factors into everything that's going to go on. It hurt. I'm not going to lie. It hurt seeing this kid sign with Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
I really wanted him to come to Florida State. I really did. It would have just been great for our program. You know, but they said out of all the coaches, he had the closest relationship with Bill Self. They said he liked Self the most, Self talked to him the most, things like that. So, you know, at least the kid's making a decision that's good for him. And if he had gone to Kentucky, he probably would have been part of that log jam where, you know, you have a bunch of, you know, great incoming players. You have a bunch of talented players. So who knows if he actually would have gotten his minutes and his time. And at Kansas, they're transitioning from Thomas Robinson, who was a star, to Ben McLemore, star player, to now Andrew Wiggins. And Wiggins is going to, you know, shoulder the load for this team. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah.
Well, you know, let's not anoint him the next, you know, great one yet.
I think Self set it up for him, Trey, where he actually came in. And I think the kid likes what Kansas is doing, and he knows he's going to be there 1 year. So I think he looked at a lot of things, and he looked at which team could I go and win a championship with. And I think that's the difference between Kansas and Florida State, really. And I think Jonathan's right about Kentucky. He's going to have to battle for playing time there. I mean, a lot of people coming back and a lot of great recruits. And even if he did start, it could cut into his minutes. It actually hurt his draft stock, trade. Just imagine if he gets out there and doesn't play much. Could he be the number one overall pick? Could he slide down to number two or three? That's another thing.
Well, and you know, there's that. And from what, you know, and it's hard to say because one of the things I really like about him is he's a kid who was the clear number one for the longest time. I mean, this kid's been the number one player in this class, you know, since his freshman year. I mean, this kid's been that good that long. And he has never been a guy who's done, like, say, the Reuben Foster thing. He didn't even when he announced, he didn't hold a press conference. He did a quiet thing in his gym for his friends and family. That's it. In fact, they had to have reporters who were outside who people came out and said, who do you think? I mean, so this was one of those kids who I think said, where's the best fit for me as a player, but also where's the best person, you know, place for me to go where I'm not going to be sort of fanaticized. You know, he's not going to be at Kentucky where basketball is absolute fanatically. I mean, of course, Kansas has fanatical fans, but it's a little different. So I think he chose probably the best place for him to actually win a championship and play sort of world-class basketball. Unfortunately for those of us who are Florida State fans, where, you know, I wish him all the best. I really wish we'd have gotten him at Florida State because he probably could have put Florida State basketball on the map. But for him, it's probably a really good pick, Darvin.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to see how he does. I mean, college basketball is changing a lot with this one and done. I'm just interested to see how Kentucky takes it with this recruiting class and improves from the NIT loss to James Madison. And if they can really, truly win a championship, because nobody's talking about Louisville right now. I mean, the defending champions. So it's all about Kansas and Kentucky. So you know, some bulletin board material for Louisville now to work harder, you know, to come out and try to defend their championship. But I have a feeling it's going to go to either Kansas or Kentucky. But I just want to tell everybody thank you tonight for joining us. Thanks to Brian Paul from XL Sports Recruiting, man. Appreciate you coming in and doing an interview with us. It was a good interview, Trey, and I really enjoyed it. So, Trey, how's the Twitter going? Give us all that information real quick.
Yeah, our Twitter handle is @WayInSports. It's all one word, WayInSports. We have, you know, and I do want to mention one thing that we got off Twitter before we go because, you know, I hype up Twitter and then I don't want to be the guy who doesn't bring it up when we actually get something on Twitter. Joshua Shaw, if you want to call in and talk about this, this is NBA basketball, Tarvin. He'd ask us to talk about the Kings and Sacramento voting to keep the Kings in Sacramento and denying sort of the Seattle movement to bring the Kings to Seattle. So, Tarvin and Jonathan, if you're still around, tell me about, you know, what do you think about this? Is this a good move for the NBA overall? Certainly it's a good move for Sacramento and the city of Sacramento, but what do you think about this, and is basketball better in Seattle or Sacramento?
Jonathan, go ahead.
It's a double-edged sword because David Stern is looking, and he realizes, he really does, as well as Oklahoma City, as great as Oklahoma City has been to the Thunder, he screwed up when he took that team from Seattle. He did. And Seattle fans have let him know. But he doesn't want to make the same mistake of taking a team from Sacramento. Granted, you know, you want to call it Sacramento's team. The Kings have kind of bounced around a little bit in their history. I mean, I don't know how many of you guys remember, but they actually started in Kansas City. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. You know, the Madoff brothers, not the Madoff brothers, the Maloof brothers are set on selling this team to Seattle, essentially. They will not deal with Sacramento. So I think the fact that the owners are kind of taking away the power from the sellers here is a huge problem. That's something that needs to stop.
Yeah, definitely. And you know what, whether it's in Seattle or Sacramento, really, who cares? I mean, I don't care. I mean, I think Seattle is mad that they got it taken away and they want it back. But really, Trey, Sacramento, what have they done ever since they've been there? Sacramento has sucked every year except maybe, what, two?
Yeah, I mean, they've certainly been a struggling franchise. I mean, and they've had so many times recently where they've gotten a great kid in the draft, and you really think, hey, man, this is it. They're going to be good. I mean, and it just doesn't work out. And yeah, I kind of feel bad for Sacramento because they've had players that I really thought were going to do something. I mean, Tyreke Evans had a great rookie season and then fell off the map. I mean, so, you know, I don't know what's going on with that whole franchise. I mean, because I don't think they've made necessarily terrible personnel moves. You know, they're not the Oakland Raiders of the NBA. I mean, so, you know, you got to feel for Sacramento because certainly the ownership wants to have them leave. They've had a lot of bad results with some, you know, really talented players. And now, you know, who knows if they're actually going to get that team out of there to Seattle.
Well, I mean, we will discuss this at a later time. And Joshua Shaw is one of our followers on the show. We want to thank him for his question. He was in the chat room earlier, and he came back. So I just want to thank everybody for coming. And just to remind everyone, tonight at midnight, we start, or in the morning, let's just say, at midnight, we start the We Are the Stat Fix show on Blog Talk Radio. I want to thank them. We should have, you know, probably about 50,000 listeners of this episode. So it was a great episode tonight. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I want to thank you, Jonathan and Trey, for coming on and making it fun and a lot of sports. Jonathan, in closing, anything you want to bring up before we go?
No, I mean, you know, thanks for having me on. It was fun, and it's great to be able to get off work after a long day and join you guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you bet. Trey?
I'd just like to say that it's just been announced that Derrick Rose is doubtful for next season.
Oh, God.
Seriously?
No, I'm joking, man. I don't know, man. I'm joking for all people listening. I'm just joking. I've been hating on Derrick Rose and not playing for a while. So, yeah, I mean, now the Bulls season, Tarvin, the Bulls season is over. Now begins the question mark about will Derrick Rose actually play next year to start the season? I'm interested to see when and if he plays again. So, that's all I have for tonight.
Well, just one little thing, you know, the Dodgers last in the NL West. You pay all that money, and I just want the fans out there, and you can look us up on Twitter, Facebook, send us a message. Should Don Mattingly be fired? I mean, you pay that kind of money, you should win baseball games. But it also goes to show, let people know that the team is the most important thing. So, the Yankees do it. They go out and buy the talent. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I think the Dodgers and the Angels need to realize that sometimes the biggest payroll doesn't mean success. So I just want to throw that out there and want to thank everybody. At Weigh In Sports, the Twitter handle, and go to Facebook. We do have a message group, Weigh In Sports Talk, and also a page. You can like our page as well. So our shows are every Wednesday and Sunday from 9 p.m. to 11 Eastern, around that time, and we are a college football, NFL football show, so we'll have a lot of new listeners tonight. Just want to throw that out there. Join us. We have a lot of fun, especially during football season. It gets wild on this show.
Mm-hmm.
So we enjoyed everybody coming tonight. Trey, take care. Jonathan, take care. Great show, and again, special thanks to Brian Paul from Excel Recruiting for joining us.
See you guys.